Hello and welcome to the FinTech Newscast. My name is Steve. This week, we'll be talking about the New York Attorney General investigating Tether, E-Trade offering crypto trading, and Uber and PayPal get into a very interesting partnership. Please hit subscribe to keep up with this and the latest in FinTech news. Alrighty, welcome to the FinTech Newscast. This is Steve, and I'm here with my co-host, Monica. Hey, Monica.
Hey, Steve. How's it going?
It's going pretty well. Thanks for joining us. Today, we're, of course, sans John, as we've been for the past few weeks. John is on special assignment. We hope he'll be back soon.
His special assignment is vacation.
Vacation time.
I hope all of our listeners get to go on that special assignment at the time of their own choosing as well.
And that is your pro health tip for the episode today.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, Monica, we have a couple of interesting articles today. The first one is regarding the newly elected New York AG going after a kind of a shady Tether crypto outfit.
Yeah, so longtime listeners may remember us talking about Tether before. Tether is called Tether because it's considered a stable coin where its value is pegged basically at a one-to-one relationship to the US dollar. So Tether, when they launched, they made a big splash about how they had a dollar in reserves for every Tether stablecoin that they would be putting out there.
For every single coin.
For every single coin.
By the way, before we get into the story, doesn't this sort of go against the whole principle of Bitcoin, which is that it's decentralized, it's free-floating and all that kind of stuff?
Yeah, so Tether's purpose was never kind of intended to be that. It was actually kind of originally conceived as a way to facilitate the conversion of different coins and currencies back to one another. And in fact, it had actually been quite successful at that. About 80% of all Bitcoin trading is done in Tether, and that's according to a research site called CryptoCompare. It has been used. And then it got in the news for the wrong reasons. So New York State, which is a very powerful force in financial regulation generally, and a lot of that has to do with Wall Street, but some of it just also has to do with their laws and their historical focus on this stuff. They elected a new attorney general in last year's election, and she has now accused Tether and its owner, Bitfinex, which I may be saying right, and I may not, of pulling funds out of that reserve fund that was used to kind of anchor and tether, tethers to US dollars, to cover $850 million that went missing from Tether's operations.
That is not chump change. So how do you lose $850 million?
How do you lose $850 million? So this is the story as we know it today, and I do want to be clear that Tether has stated that they have done nothing wrong and that this is kind of a misunderstanding and that their actions are being mischaracterized. That's so that I don't get any other lawyers off on me. But apparently sometime last year, we don't really know, Tether handed $850 million over to a third-party payments processor named Crypto Capital Corporation. And these were to handle customer withdrawal requests. If you're thinking, gosh, that's an awful lot of money to hand over, yes, I thought so too. And apparently, Crypto Capital just didn't process those payments. So Bitfinex says that the money wasn't lost, but that the funds were, and I quote here, seized and safeguarded. And they're working on getting them back. Well, that's nice to know. But at some point, Tether realized that the funds weren't coming back, and so they dipped into this reserve fund. So now Bitfinex and Tether are saying, hey, when we took that, you know, it's a little over $700 million that appears to be missing from the reserve fund. When we took that, we're just calling this as a loan. And and they are trying very hard, as you would expect, to delay any injunctions and production of files that the Attorney General is now saying that they need to do. I think they're also trying to get a ruling stating that New York State doesn't actually have any jurisdiction over them.
Are they based in New York State, I wonder?
I apologize. I don't even know. I am just like,
it wouldn't matter. Yeah.
Oh, my God. Yeah. So a couple of other things that are kind of interesting here. So when Tether first launched, one of their big things that they kind of put in their FAQs and their prospectus was that they were completely backed with U.S. dollars for every single coin. And then back in March, they just kind of fudged the language a little bit.
Saying maybe most coins were backed by
U.S. dollars?
And some ratio or something?
So now they're saying that 74% of Tether coins are backed on a one-to-one basis by U.S. dollars. So what's interesting here? Well, you know, when we first talked about Tether, we thought, oh, wow, this could actually be really useful in financial markets generally and specifically crypto markets. And it seems to have taken off and done that very, very well. However, operations and execution and just kind of the general sense of Wild West and lawlessness that has kind of been present in this market seems to have really bitten them hard. And by the way, where is this crypto capital corporation? And I hope Letitia James goes after them too.
It's interesting that this is being handled by an AG and not some other body like the SEC or FINRA, right? It kind of speaks to the gray area in which these crypto funds or crypto operations work. But I wonder, can this be the moment at which, you know, maybe we put a closure to all this wild speculation and sort of, as you mentioned, the wild west stuff, or is it just one more step along the way for us to get to some other point where this wouldn't take place? I don't know. It seems like there's always some sort of scandal like this one taking shape. And it seems like there's no one body really overseeing how this stuff operates and works.
There's definitely no one body overseeing it. And maybe that's too much to expect in financial markets in the U.S. today. There's probably never been just kind of one body that oversees everything. But absolutely, to your point, it does kind of seem like nobody's minding the store except maybe the New York State Attorney General. But these are things that would be much better handled at the federal level. And I mean, if you made me put money on it, I'd say we're going to see more of this stuff come to light before we see any kind of regulatory framework come out of it. Because if you think about this, like, it was just last year when it was Bitcoin mania and the tide has washed out, but it does take a while to see who lost their shorts.
We'll keep an eye on whoever shorts wash up on shore.
We're on short watch.
We're on short watch, yeah. So speaking of crypto news, we have some news from E-Trade.
So I should actually reframe that a little bit. This actually hasn't been officially announced by E-Trade, but Bloomberg had an article out this week that it seems very, very likely that E-Trade is going to be launching cryptocurrency trading for its clients. And, you know, if you know anything about E-Trade, you know, it's kind of like all the moms and the pops and the Joes and the Jans, mm-hmm. That's who their clients are. So what this means is that you will certainly put a little bit more of kind of the imprimatur of normalcy and this is a real investment on cryptocurrency if people can access it and trade it from E-Trade. And they will probably be taking away some business from firms like Coinbase and Robinhood that have been playing in this space but certainly have much lower name recognition in the wider just kind of
the mass retail investor.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. The mass investor space.
Yeah.
So we'll know more if and when E-Trade announces what they're actually going to do there.
So it's interesting to note here that according to Robinhood's number, which by the way haven't been audited, mm-hmm. they have more accounts than E-Trade. But E-Trade has a fairly high AUM, which is
It looked like it was around $340 billion.
Right, which I'm assuming would have to be much less than what Robinhood has, just given their customers.
Much more, rather.
Yeah, sorry, yeah. Mm-hmm. Which I assume it's much more than what Robinhood has, and they've also gotten into the crypto space. I just don't see what E-Trade is seeing in this space from like a business strategy perspective. Why get into
commissions?
But why, if you're your typical crypto bro, mm-hmm. wouldn't you use like Coinbase or Coin or Robinhood or another trading app and not E-Trade, which is seen as sort of like the stodgier like Gen X tech firm?
Gosh, man, you're making me feel really old with that.
I'm also a Gen Xer.
With that concatenation of stodgy and Gen X.
Yeah.
Well, I think that might be the case today, but, you know, E-Trade is looking ahead. And even I, someone who is not particularly interested in cryptocurrencies as an asset. Part of my portfolio.
Don't do it.
But I can certainly see how you can make the case that for certain people, it makes sense for them to have it in their financial plan. And frankly, if you made me invest in cryptocurrency, I would rather do it with E-Trade than with Robinhood. I would rather do it with E-Trade
or Coinbase
than Coinbase.
Or something. Yeah.
I would rather choose to work with an organization who has a lot more public reporting about how they run their business. They have a lot more familiarity with the risks inherent to financial trading, not just to them as an organization, but also to the customers that they're servicing. So
they have a compliance department.
Yeah, they have a compliance department. They're probably not going to announce a banking product that they can't announce because they're not a bank,
right,
like Robinhood did.
Right. The only argument that I see against the E-Trade is that, of course, they charge you, what is it, $7 per trade, whereas Robinhood is quote-unquote free.
Yeah.
So if you are your typical, you know, returns maximizing crypto bro, you want to have that low or very or free essentially transaction costs, so it makes sense to go with Robinhood and not with E-Trade.
Yeah, it'll be very interesting to see if they do actually launch this, what their customer acquisition trajectory looks like,
right?
Is it new customers or is it customers who have always been with E-Trade and just really wanted to buy a little bit of Bitcoin because it looks like it's on the downswing?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. We shall see. We'll keep an eye on that. So, moving on from crypto and getting into the payments partnership space. It was announced last week that PayPal made a $500 million investment into Uber, which I think will be enough to stem their losses for, what, a quarter or so? Less than a quarter.
Yeah. We calculated it about, at Uber's current run rate, that'll give them about a month and a half.
Yeah. So, this is a really interesting play from both PayPal and Uber. So, essentially, this would give Uber access to the PayPal infrastructure for payments. And it would also give PayPal exposure, if you will, into the Uber IPO. So I think the argument here is that this is a way for Uber to kind of pad their books and have more cash at hand before they file their IPO. But it also has a lot of interesting effects on Uber and its products. So Uber, of course, has the Uber Cash app, and Uber also has a Visa card as well. And of course, for every transaction that you make, you have to pay an interchange fee or some sort of transaction fee to Visa, MasterCard, or Amex, or whatever the payment rail is. So by using PayPal to power both their Uber Cash and maybe their Uber Visa card as well, and then go globally, Uber can really cut down on their transaction cost.
Mm-hmm.
PayPal can get access to more of a global force, which is really interesting. Oh, and this may enable the use of PayPal to kind of top up your Uber Cash card.
Mm-hmm.
So it seems like a win-win all around.
It does. I feel like when I first read about this, it was in an article that had a headline about how Uber was having to lower its IPO valuation. So Uber had already announced, of course, that it's going public, and then it lowered its total valuation that it expects to go for. And then they also said, oh, but hey, by the way, we're fine. PayPal just gave us $500 million.
Right. Which will cover, again, a few weeks of losses. Yeah.
So, you know, you can certainly see how it's advantageous for PayPal. It probably helps them get a slice of a younger and more global demographic than they have been kind of cultivating here primarily in North America. And, I mean, Uber needs all the money it can get. And remember, kids, you need to take your Uber and your Lyft rides now while the VCs are still subsidizing it.
Exactly. What is it? It's something like a quarter or 25% more cheaper than it should be because of the VC funding or something. That's the number that I've heard.
It has to be at least that.
Yeah.
I mean, it just has to be.
I've taken Ubers for like $7, and it's like, this is too little. This is almost like taking BART. It shouldn't be this cheap.
No.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. I should also note that there's sort of a race for powering payments across the globe, and there's a few massive players, right? There's Amazon in the U.S. They have a whole payments ecosystem. There's also Alipay in Asia, especially in East Asia and China. And PayPal sees this as a way to get access to the global market. So again, because Uber has a presence, I think, in most countries in the world, either through their direct Uber platform or through their partners like Didi in China. So this is a way for PayPal to get into that action as well. So I think it's a better move for PayPal than it is for Uber, frankly. But it's still something that where both players can get a lot of business value from this transaction.
And good for them, right? Win-wins are a beautiful thing, and would that the world had more of them. I am still not clear on why anybody wants an Uber Visa card.
You get points. You get rewards that you can use for free Uber rides. You can get your food delivery and your taxis and all that Uber stuff. In one place.
I don't know. I just don't get that much delivered to me that way.
I never get delivery, but I just don't lead a delivery life, I guess. I'm a pickup guy.
I think we're stodgy Gen Xers.
I think we are. I ordered Chinese food on Friday, and I said, can I just go pick it up? It was a pain to park and get my food, but I'd rather go pick it up than get it sent to my house. Anyway.
So if you're living the delivery life, let us know if you have a Uber Visa card.
Yeah, I think the argument is that Uber's users are very engaged, somewhat affluent millennial types. Mm-hmm. So, you know, PayPal wants to get in on that action. Of course, they've seen their numbers decrease in that customer segment as people favor things like the Square Cash app or Venmo, which is of course by PayPal. But you know, it's way for getting into this growing segment and not be sort of the forgotten player. I think that if you look at if you compare Venmo and PayPal's users, I think PayPal tends to be a little bit older, potentially. So this, again, gives them access to this stuff, which is pretty interesting.
Yeah. Well, we will stay tuned.
And now it's time for our final bite, where we look at a number and the interesting story behind it. Monica, what's your number?
So my number is $5 billion. And this is generally considered the upper limit of what the FTC will fine Facebook for repeated privacy violations dating all the way back to a consent decree that Facebook got on board with back in 2011. And I am certainly not the first person to say this, and I'm sure I won't be the last, but when Facebook announced their quarterly results last week, they said that they had already set aside $3 billion to pay this fine, and their business results were such that their stock price went up. And I am here to tell you that if something in the neighborhood of $3 to $5 billion as a fine makes Wall Street so blasé, then you know what, FTC? The fine ain't big enough.
I agree. Yeah, this is a few weeks of revenue for Facebook. I think that the argument against that is that markets responded positively because markets like predictability, right? They want to make sure that people have, that Facebook has the reserves in place and they know what's coming. So it's easier to account for that as opposed to just a fine that's out of the blue. So I can see why they would respond positively. It's also interesting to note that despite all the troubles, right, I feel like we're kind of live in a bubble here where we are very aware of Facebook's privacy intrusions and all the stuff they did with the election and, you know, and so on and so forth, all the tracking across the web they do. But people still continue to use the platform in massive numbers.
Both
Instagram, Facebook, and WhatsApp. So even though we may be in a place where we're sort of are very skeptical about the company now, in the broader world, people still freaking love Facebook. Or use Facebook.
They love to use it. I actually think they have a huge trust and reputation issue, even more so for the Facebook brand than for some of the others. And I also think that Facebook is actually much better at managing its financials and its investors than it is its business. And that is also a deep indictment of an organization, if you ask me.
Yeah. Well, one more data point in the Facebook saga, I guess.
More to come.
More to come. Did you read the article in Wired from maybe 2 weeks ago?
Yes.
The 5,000 word or something. Really fascinating article about the awful year that was at Facebook in 2018.
Yes.
Pretty good stuff. We'll link to it in the show notes, but highly recommended.
And then if you want to feel good about people who work at Facebook, you can read the New Yorker's article about their kind of content security team, how they responded to the Christchurch shooting. And that one was interesting because it actually named people. And so I thought, they must have gotten okay from their superiors at Facebook to speak to the press.
They
so
did.
I was like, oh, they really needed some good stuff.
Yeah. They're also, isn't Facebook, aren't Facebook employees typically at the high end of the most highly paid employees in the Bay Area? I think it's like Splunk and then Facebook or something. It's pretty fascinating. So. Yeah. I can see why when you're in the machine, you kind of want to keep it running.
Totally. And I don't actually think that we should, if we're going to be living in a world where we expect employees to be the person who writes company, to be the organization that writes the company ship, then all hope is lost, because that is simply not reasonable to expect of employees whose livelihoods depend on an organization. It's just, that's not how it works.
Right, right, yeah.
So come on, FTC, give them a $20 billion fine, give them a $30 billion fine, and then we'll see what happens.
Yeah, it has to be a deterrent. This is not a deterrent.
Exactly, $3 billion for a company like Facebook is chump change.
Didn't Google also pay like a $2 billion fine to the EU or something, or 1.5 or something?
They did, and that did have an effect on their quarterly results, but what really sent their stock price spinning down is the fact that in an environment where companies are spending more on ad dollars, Google had a year-over-year slowdown in their advertising revenue growth. Mm. So Google is, something else is going on, or at least was going on last quarter with Google.
This is off the weeds, but I heard that unbeknownst to most people, Amazon is actually the third largest ad platform on the web right now.
Yeah.
There's Facebook, Google, and then Amazon, which is pretty interesting. And they're increasing significantly year over year. So we may see them take over.
Yes, and Amazon, for the first time, surpassed Google as the first place people go to look up something that they want to buy. So it used to be that people would first go to Google and then often click on the Amazon link. But now they're going straight to Amazon because Amazon has its own inventory, vendor inventory, and advertised inventory that isn't even necessarily associated with Amazon that you see advertised below. So,
right. So if you click on a product that says recommended by Amazon online, that's a placement from a company. That's an ad. You're clicking on an ad.
You're always clicking on an ad.
Oh, you're always clicking on an ad, yeah.
If your mouse is hovering anywhere on a screen, you're clicking on
an ad. You're clicking on an ad, yeah. True. Alrighty, that's a good number. My final bite is 996. So, Monica, how many hours do you typically work in a week? Say between 35 and 50, right? That seems like a reasonable range.
Let's keep it more on the 35 end if
we can. The 35 end, yeah, ideally, right? Yeah. Well, in China, they have this thing called 996, which is where you work. Is it 996?
Yes.
Yeah. So in China, you have 996, which is where you work from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. 6 days a week.
Oh.
Monday through Saturday.
Oh.
So a lot of fairly prominent people in fintech and in tech in China have upheld this 996 rule as the reason why China has taken all these leaps in this technology, right?
Mm-hmm.
People work really hard. Jack Ma, who's the founder of Alibaba and Alipay, has been a big proponent of this. But apparently there's some sort of trouble brewing now and a backlash to this. So people are saying that basically they're being burnt out.
Shocker.
Shocker, right? Your productivity will decrease if you work, you know, all those hours. Even imagine working Saturday, 9 to 9 p.m., on a continual basis, just that's just the new normal. It's insane. So
9 a.m. to 9 p.m. on a continual basis.
Just.
That is like.
Yeah.
Oh.
You can definitely work like 50 hours a week for more than that. Even 60 hours a week for a week or two, that's fine.
But for years?
But
for decades,
it's untenable, unsustainable, yeah. So there's a big backlash now among the China's tech workers where they're just saying, you know, this is untenable, we can't do this anymore. And because it's China and people cannot express dissent as freely as they could otherwise, they've kind of found ways to express their disapproval of this policy across the Chinese internet. So in essence, you know, there's an awesome article in the Times about this, but which we'll link to, but it's basically there's a brewing backlash against working these insane hours in the country. And what's funny is that the article mentions that a lot of the Chinese workers compare even the quote unquote hustlers in Silicon Valley is like, they just see them as slackers. Like, you're only putting in 6 hours a week. How dare you?
Yeah.
Which is pretty interesting. But again, I don't think a recipe for a good, productive, engaged, and happy workforce.
I definitely agree. And one of the things that struck me as quite interesting in this article as well is some of the specifics of how the Communist Party and the Chinese government kind of regulates workplace practices and unionizing, which Spoiler, you can't. Mm-hmm. But also that as China's economy has created these huge technological winners, that there's a sense that if you don't work for one of those companies, you're not going to be able to make it. Your firm doesn't have the same chances for success. It doesn't have the same sponsorship at the top levels of the party. So why should you kill yourself for 996? And I thought that that is very interesting in of itself, but it did actually make me think about Silicon Valley. And are we about to be in an era, or are we already in an era where our tech giants are so big and hoover up any competitive threat that they perceive through acquisition or driving them out of business that, you know, might you have other people who kind of look at it and say, why should I kill myself for this startup? It's either going to get squashed by Facebook or bought out, you know?
Right. What's the point? Yeah.
Yeah. And also just like, people need to work to live 9 to 9, 6 days a week. How do you have a relationship with your family? How do you rejuvenate? Where do you go to get creative? When do you eat dinner? Do you go to bed with indigestion every night? Like, I have questions.
So many questions, little answers. But we'll leave it at that. Thank you for joining. Please email us at info@fintechnewscast.com for any questions or suggestions. And we'll be back next week.
Thanks for listening.
Thanks. We'll